musician and comedian Carrie Brownstein, ABC 7's Hungry Hound Steve Dolinsky, and live local music from Mooner. Now here's your host, a man who tried to record the entire show so he could watch tonight's episode of Supergirl, Justin Kaufman.
Supergirl, it's the new rage. Who doesn't want to watch Supergirl? I want to watch Supergirl. Forget the Bears, huh? It'd be great if Obi and Hamp would do just what happened on Supergirl. Doubt that's going to happen. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here, WGN Radio. Got an excellent show lined up for you tonight. Nice little alternative to the sporting event that everybody's watching, but let's be honest, nobody is. It's the Bears. Just missed a 47-yard field goal to start off. Robbie Gould, the MVP, missing a 47-yarder to start. Not good. Now that Chicago's budget is sewn up, all eyes are turning to Cook County. If it's not going to be a sales tax or an amusement tax, what kind of tax is it going to be? Well, the game of hot potato continues. President Preckwinkle will check in on the latest hotel tax, as well as figure out why Illinois medical marijuana is already turning away potential customers. And my guest tonight in the 8 o'clock hour, groundbreaking musician, comedian, and now author Carrie Brownstein. Her new memoir is titled Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl. It talks about her life growing up in the Seattle suburbs and being immersed in punk rock leading up to her time with Slater Kinney, of course, Portlandia. We'll talk about all that coming up after 8 o'clock. Also tonight, ABC 7's Hungry Hound Steve Dolinsky has spent months putting together the authority on Chicago pizza. Best tavern style, thin, stuffed, deep dish, you name it. Steve's eaten it. And he's going to join us again with the full results and talk about the nonstop pizza-themed threats he's received. How dare you not include Pat's Pizza? And since the Cubs are over, it doesn't mean that the fan jam should be. We here at The Download are going to dedicate ourselves to watching regular season Bulls basketball. Why? So you don't have to. Our resident statistician Jack Silverstein is watching intently as we speak, really paying close attention to anything Stacey King says. So we're going to talk about that because really somebody should pay attention to Stacey King. All that plus the latest news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier, Eric Sullivan, and production by the baddest man in the land, Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here's The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who live here. All right, nice to be back. Nice to be here. Let's kick things off with the carryout. If you don't know, this is the nightly segment where I read the newspaper. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Donald Trump hosted SNL on Saturday, and according to a poll of who among presidential candidates are the most qualified to host SNL, the next president will be Alec Baldwin. Trump had major ratings for the live late-night comedy show, but then again, so did One Direction. And at least they didn't look uncomfortable, play themselves in every sketch, and have goofy hair. Wait. Starbucks unveiled their new holiday season red cups to controversy, trademark, as millions took to the streets, or five people took to Twitter, to protest the removal of the words Merry Christmas from their cup. They also removed snowflakes off the cup. Maybe that's because it never snows in Jerusalem. Huh? Conspiracy? Anyway, somebody's mad at cups. Looks like we may have a sequel on our hands just in time for Christmas. Teacher strike, electric boogaloo. Teachers union president Karen Lewis is telling her members to be ready for a long strike. Save your money, go to the store, get duct tape, canned food. It's just like the beginning scene of Red Dawn where the kids go stock up at the hardware store. Just what we need, a strike in the dead of winter. Let's get a good long one too so all our kids go to school until August. Yeah. With all the strikes happening all over the Chicago area, kids are going to gather around the radio every morning to see if they have school, just like snow days. In McHenry, District 226 is off because they couldn't figure out pensions. In Bolingbrook, asbestos. Yay! No school! Asbestos! More news out of Fox Lake is Sergeant Clinton. You know what? Pass. Pass. And we should have passed on that story from the get-go. Looks like ride-sharing will be allowed to pick up passengers at the airport as early as next week and just in time for Thanksgiving. You mean I don't have to pick up my Aunt Judy from O'Hare? Uber, you're not just paying for the car, you're paying the driver to listen to Aunt Judy's back pain stories. And I can't wait for the collective, I just started driving 3 hours ago and the GPS says to take River Road to downtown. Is that right? Social media may affect your credit score. FICA is combining Facebook and other sites for indicators that you may be a credit risk. For instance, if you update your status with, I'm wasted, or I'm double wasted, Or, I hate paying bills so I don't, ha ha ha, what are you going to do about it, FICA? You're probably going to see a dip in your rating. No word on whether or not posting emojis will help or hurt your score. Speaking of, here's the download's emoji report. There's a new one that's a heart with a lock on it. And after much consideration, we think it's positive. And also, we're still really confused about eggplants. That's been the download's emoji report. The new Bond movie, Spectra, won the box office, but not as big as it was supposed to. The movie stars Daniel Craig, who returns as the famous and well-known spy that makes a giant presence of himself wherever he goes with a string of murders and explosions and tells everybody his real name twice. So, not that much of a spy. Maybe that's the problem. You don't hear Matt Damon saying, Bourne, Jason Bourne, everywhere he goes. That would kind of defeat the purpose. In weather, November-y today. In sports, the Bears have decided to take their unique brand of losing national. They're in San Diego tonight for Monday Night Football. No Matt Forte, of course. Hey, at least the Bears are competitive. At this time last year, it was blowout after blowout. I like what John Fox is doing with this team, even though he may be the worst coach in the media. Hey, Coach Fox, your hair's on fire.
Yeah, well, we're going to take a look at the film. We're going to take it one day at a time.
No, right now, it's on fire.
Yeah, well, you know, football's a game of inches, so.
It's spreading to your shoulders.
Yeah, well, we don't comment on personnel, just a game of inches. No, that was my John Fox.
Tonight, the Bulls are in Philly. Let's see how they bounce back after their first coach yell. Hoiberg got mad after the bad showing against Minnesota on Saturday. So will they respond, or will they do their best guilty dog walk after they went nosing through the trash? Because Saturday was pretty trashy. The Illini fired athletic director Mike Thomas today. I heard there's a couple jobs open at Mizzou. Too soon? Is it too soon? Probably too soon. And finally, there's going to be a lot of traffic gridlock around Wrigley Field this winter. And if you need to complain, the alderman says to complain to the Cubs. How does that work exactly? Should we complain like we do when a relief pitcher blows a save? Come on, traffic, you're a bum! Get that traffic jam out of the game! Boo! But really, it's your fault. I mean, there's no reason to drive through Wrigleyville. You're an adult. Well, that's the carryout for November 9th, 2015. I put a couple extra saltines in the bag for you. Because oyster crackers? So yummy. More to come on the download tonight. Mike Fouché from AlderTrax here. We're going to talk about medical marijuana being rolled out today. Also about the hotel tax, Cook County. And Carrie Brownstein, Sleater-Kinney, Portlandia, and her new memoir coming up. It's a download here on WGN. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know what? The Chicago budget was wrapped up. Everyone's all eyes on Springfield, as it is still right. Not wrapped up. But yep. But next week and the next Wednesday, the Cook County Board will go at Tony Preckwinkle's.
The
forgotten stepchild. Mike Fouché's here. He's with AlderTrack, which is the subscription newsletter, AlderTrack.com, which covers all things Chicago politics. Mike, good to see you.
Hey, it's awesome to be here.
So, yeah, let's talk about that because it is the forgotten stepchild.
Man, it's so weird. You know, I mean, the building is the same size as City Hall, right? But you go over there and the county board meets, you know, they're only 17 and it's kind of nice and everybody sees it, you know, hello. And the county board president, Preckwinkle, waves at people and says hello. And, you know, you have press conferences and there's like six people. And she, after the press conference, I wasn't there today, but one of our reporters said, yeah, you know, after the press conference, she got up and shook everybody's hand and said, thank you for being here. You can't imagine Rahm Emanuel ever doing that, ever.
That would be something, right?
It would
Well, let's talk about that, because this year's budget is bigger than last year's, which is not the trend in government, no. Especially local government.
No, not the trend. So this year, it's $540 million more than it was last year. And the argument is, well, there's more expenses that are coming through for the jail and also for the hospital. And really, the truth of it is, the Cook County government really does four things, okay? They run the Forest Preserve. They have the hospitals, and then they have the jail and the courts. And then the fourth thing is that they run all the property taxes for mm-hmm. all the other governments that are in Cook County. So, you know, they need more money to run the hospitals, which are really big, mm-hmm. and the jails, which is also really big. In fact, I think the Cook County Jail on 26th and Cal is like one of the biggest jails in the country. So You know,
and very documented as well, with all the whole nation seems to watch the overcrowding issues.
Right.
The fact that they're under-resourced.
And it's the country's largest mental health facility, mm-hmm. too, which is kind of amazing. So anyway, with all that sad, bad news, putting that aside, which is that they want more money in order to run the county government. And so they already voted for a sales tax increase last summer, which doesn't take effect until January 1st. And it was very sly of, or very smart, or whatever, however you want to put it, of President Preckwinkle that she had the vote last summer before the budget was taken care of. So now she's got that banked, but she still needs more money. And
so that's why she did it.
Right.
Because at the time we talked to her, we had different people on. We talked about why are you going out of the normal routine as you do this right before the budget cycle. She'd be doing it right now. But instead of doing a sales tax right now, she already got that bank. She's doing a hotel tax.
She's talking about hotel tax. Right. Last week there was this idea that they were going to have an amusement tax increase. You know, already you pay a tax if you go bowling, if you go to a baseball game, et cetera, et cetera. She was going to add on a number of additional other things that in order to that would be taxed, you know, very small amount. I think it was, you know, 3%. But even so, people weren't crazy about that. And that got pushed back in a big way. So today they had a special Cook County board meeting, and there was actually a press conference beforehand saying, no, we don't like this, in order to introduce a hotel tax of a couple of dollars per stay. Now, it's not a whole lot of money. You know, President Preckwinkle's argument is, you know, who's going to notice if it's a couple dollars more when they come to Chicago if you're already paying $300? You know, what's $304? But, you know, the Chicago Chamber of Commerce came out along with Commissioner John Fritchie and Commissioner Bridget Gaynor, who are both Northsiders from probably, you know, the wealthier parts of Chicago. And they said, no, this is a terrible thing. Now, the truth is that one way or another, this tax, some sort of tax increase is going to be passed through. Exactly what it's going to be a good question, because next Wednesday is going to be the vote in the Cook County Board.
And how, I mean, like you said, there's only 17 commissioners, so it's not like they have to, you know, rally that there's 17 votes.
No.
But is that make it easier or harder for something like a hotel tax to be attached to a budget to for a president to push something through?
Well, it means that there's fewer people in order to count. You know, I would argue that if you had more people, it would be easier. I mean, you look at the way that city council went, and, you know, you got only 15 people that really opposed the budget. Mm-hmm. And there was all the brouhaha about the property tax increase.
Yeah.
15 out of 50, you know, isn't really a big number. So
it is in Chicago.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, we have a different math. Chicago math. Hey. So, you know, I think that the whole thing is it harder? I don't know. Yeah. I think that there are a number of people who she can really bank on. And the finance committee chair is John Daly, the brother of former Mayor Daly. John Daly really knows how to count votes. He's a very smart guy.
Let me ask you this, because you mentioned two, I would say, outspoken critics of President Preckwinkle. They're both Democrats, but Gaynor and Fritchie.
Right.
And there are
Republicans on the Cook County
board.
There are.
So, but let's, I mean, what's the political fallout of too much taxing? I mean, at the Cook County level, it doesn't seem like it gets the ire of the voters. I mean, we've seen, besides maybe Todd Stroger, which was the huge, you know, like the biggest debacle in Cook County politics.
So,
is there anything that could hurt President Preckwinkle by just adding on all this, these revenue?
I will take the economist viewpoint. A job that I had in the past is I worked for the chief economist of the U.S. Department of Energy, who was a very smart guy. And, you know, everybody in D.C. thought he was a genius. I thought he was a genius. And the way that my former boss, Mark Mazur, would put it is that you can tax as much as you need until something bad happens. But when is something bad going to happen? Well, it's difficult to know. You can make all kinds of models and graphs and lines and things like that on a chart, but there's always some amount that the market is willing to bear, that the people are willing to bear, and it's usually more than what it is that you anticipate.
Well, you know, it's an interesting concept of going to a hotel tax, because an amusement tax like the sales tax, and we had Commissioner Boykin and others on who talked about the idea of that being just a tax to poor people. The idea that you're putting more 10 cents, 11 cents on everyone who's buying milk and eggs and trying to feed their family. And an amusement tax is, I'm going to take my family out bowling and it's going to be another $5. Right. At least is Preckwinkle listening to the idea that this is taxing businesses or business travelers, this is taxing tourists, things like that, not the sort of mom and pop, the people who are coming downtown?
Preckwinkle, and I don't want to read her mind, but just listening to the kind of things that she's talked about, I think the argument that she'll make is that Cook County government is already essentially services for poor people. And so she's already trying to serve poor people. And one of the other interesting things that they're doing with this budget in Cook County government is that they're overpaying their pension payments because they want to be able to get ahead and have future payments be less. Whereas in Chicago, you know, they're riding the line for the city of Chicago.
That's a progressive way to approach pension reform.
And that's how she would like to talk about it. That's how she would like to talk about it.
All right, let's take a break because I want to get to the news with Rob at the top here. Stick around.
Yeah.
I want to talk about medical marijuana, and I want to talk about Springfield because it looks like there's a battle brewing over the child care cuts, which seem to be something in the past, and here it comes back again.
Yes.
We'll talk more with Mike Fouché from AlderTrack.com when we come back here on The Download. Stay with us. There you go, a little crew for the return. Chelsea Goffman here on The Download on WGN. Good to hear Rob Martyr's pipes, man. Wow, that's a newsman. Good to hear from him. Mike Fouché is in studio with me, AlderTrack.com. He is the man behind, he's co-creator of the site that really it's a newsletter that covers all things Chicago politics.
Yep.
One big thing today, which is political, medical marijuana.
Yeah, yeah.
Dr. Feelgood. So
right.
Let's talk about this because, I remember when this got through. This was one of Pat Quinn's last sort of stance where he got this through and it was going to bring.
And Tom Cross, the Republican House leader, Tom Cross, he was actually a big believer in this because I think somebody in his family has MS. And so without that, it really wouldn't have happened.
So that was then. This is now. Here comes the program. Yeah. It's not like Colorado or Washington or California.
Right.
It's not the sort of medical marijuana that this country's seen before.
Right. So like if you go to California, right, there and you go to a medical marijuana place, there's like a sign on the front, you know. Do you have stomach problems? Do you have – and, like, they list the specific names of the things that you might have so that you could qualify for medical marijuana.
They're encouraging you.
And so then maybe there's a doctor that's in the office upstairs, and so you could go up there and go, I think I have glaucoma.
Stomachopia.
Whatever it is. And they go, here you go. And so then you walk downstairs and go get your thing. And in Colorado – you don't need any of that. You just walk in and say, can I have my pot, please? And then they give it to you and you're done.
Right.
So in Illinois, it's very different. We have extraordinarily tight, tight rules about what it is that it takes in order for you to be able to qualify for a prescription, to qualify for it. And the diseases are, you know, pretty serious, you know, MS, you know, those kind of things. And if you don't have that,
I think it's 11. That's what I said.
Yeah.
And there's a couple more that they tried to add to, but it's currently currently hung up.
So the result is that as of today, the first day where you can procure it, only 3,300 people got the ID cards in order to be able to qualify to purchase medical marijuana. That's a very small number. And I've spoken to a few lobbyists and attorneys that have been working on this. And so they tell me a number of things. The first off is, the applicants for the MedMal dispensaries and the cultivation facilities, cultivation centers, are very, very clouded. It's a very, very small number of applications that were accepted, and the people who applied for it were really had a lot of money behind it, and they got the top lobbyists and all those people in order. So there's no ma and pop pot shop where you can go get your, you know,
I can't go in there and be like, oh, I really want to do a pot shop.
Right. So all of these people are expecting to be losing money for some time. And the reason why, and even though there's only 3,300 or so people that are currently able to get it, the reason why is that everyone looks at this and goes, this is the crack in the dam. It's only a matter of time before Illinois is going to be like Colorado or
California. Why regulated like this? I mean, who really pushed? Was it a conservative agenda to push the idea that this is a limited, regulated medical marijuana?
Yes. There was a lot of pushback from the rest of the state. Yeah, Illinois is a conservative state.
Yeah.
You know, when you get down to it. I mean, maybe conservative, not necessarily in other things, but certainly in terms of these sort of things like pot or, you know, we're not legalizing prostitution or anything like that. So most of the state, I think, really pushed hard against that, and that was the deal that was brokered. I think everyone, though, knows that what's going to happen down the line is that it's the gates have now opened a little bit, and whether it's 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, probably everyone's going to be able to buy pot, you know, like you can in California.
Well, let me ask you, because nice transition to Springfield, because Bruce Rauner, Governor Rauner, he's kind of on the side of that they don't really want this. I mean, it doesn't seem like it seems like as a governor of, you know, background in business, he'd be like, open up the floodgates. This is a ton of revenue.
But
it doesn't seem like there's a lot of political support for this down in Springfield.
You know, I think Governor Rauner is actually a cipher in a lot of ways, because except for a small number of things, which is his turnaround agenda, he changes direction very quickly, goes one way or another on most topics. The truth is that up to this point, Governor Rauner really has not taken a lot of stances on a lot of different things, mm-hmm. because he has drawn everything laser focused to the budget and his turnaround agenda items, which are abolishing union rights for government employees, creating enterprise work zones so there's no unions in certain towns, and also changing the caps for malpractice suits and tort reform. You know, everything else has been really pushed to the side. So it's not really clear exactly what Rauner is for or not for.
Well, let's talk about what's going to happen this week in Springfield, because there just seems to be a battle brewing over child care cuts, because
yes.
That was something that happened earlier. That was a Rauner sort of, if you don't play ball, I'm going to cut this stuff. He cut it. But there seems to be a mounting protest and a little political pressure that seems to be mounting in Springfield.
So, I mean, yes. So on Friday, he announced a mandatory veto to a child care program, and that got just enormous amount of response over the weekend. A lot of people very angry about it, which meant that there would be tens of thousands of children that would be tossed out of child care programs, that essentially anybody who was a working parent would no longer be able to have child care for their kid, and there's all kinds of studies that show that actually child care programs actually save money and improve the economy, because the cost of the child care is significantly less than taking a parent out of the workforce in order to take care of their kid and no longer working and being productive. Mm-hmm. So,
but this isn't really about that.
No, it's not. And it's about trying to find cuts in the state budget. And Rauner said, well, this is where we're going to do the cuts. And he cut it back in a significant way. There was a lot of protests over the weekend. This morning, it seems that he came out with a compromise that he offered, which would make it so the cuts really wouldn't be so much. It wouldn't be tens of thousands of children thrown off the rolls. It would be, you know, more like 5,000 or 6,000, which is still a big number, but it's not as big as it was before. Whether or not that's actually going to occur, whether or not that's going to be allowed to pass, we'll find out tomorrow. Springfield is back in session. You know, I spoke to some legislators today that are very close to this issue. And, you know, one of them said to me, well, you know, everyone seems to be ready to kill one another in Springfield right now. So we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Well, it's amazing to me that from the get-go of this show, I mean, we started this show in April.
Yeah.
We started talking right away in May. I think Governor Edgar was on May, maybe
yep.
June, somewhere in there. But the thought was, we hit July 1st, that's doomsday. We hit June 15th, that's doomsday.
Right.
July 1st, July 5th, it's not going to get past August.
Right.
I mean, it'll get done in September.
Right.
October, we're talking. This is November, Mike.
Yeah.
Like, how? I don't understand how the state, and you're seeing credit ratings go down, and Rauner says he doesn't care about credit ratings, things like that. But I just don't see how a state in this union, the United States of America, can have no budget 6 months after the fact that it was due.
You know, I think it's the case of the frog in the boiling water, even though that isn't actually true. But it's still a great thing to talk about, which is that, you know, it gets worse and worse and worse, and we're not really realizing how bad it truly is because we just keep adjusting constantly. You know, Illinois, there's a lot of social services that a lot of people depend on. At some point, you know, we're going to get rid of almost all those social services. Still, the majority portion of the Illinois budget is pensions and criminal services, or, you know, criminal justice, so prisons. So at some point, you're going to have to start closing prisons. That and that's really kind of what we're talking about, and finding ways to make prisons smaller.
Do you see a possible scenario in which a budget is dealt with before the beginning of the year?
I
mean, sorry, November, right? November 10, November 9.
I have yet to have a conversation with a legislator or anybody who does a lot of work in Springfield who believes that there is a solution on the horizon. And that goes for what's going on. So while Springfield continues to be locked up, then here in Chicago, the big boogeyman is Chicago Public Schools, which passed a budget that has a $480 million hole where they said, well, you know, the state legislature is going to fill that. So now, actually, this past week, CPS started urging principals to send letters to parents, which some of the letters are starting now to come. I got a couple of letters from a couple of different schools today where principals are urging parents to contact their legislator and have the legislator pass the $480 million increase for CPS, which is kind of ludicrous because there isn't a legislator in Chicago that would not do that. I mean, it's sort of lobbying the people who agree with you, you know. And so I've spoken to legislators who are getting those calls now, and they're like, you know, this isn't doing anything. It's just people mad at me for something that I don't have the power to change.
Well, we're definitely going to have a full show on that.
Yeah,
because that's coming up here. Let's talk, Rick, you know, as we wrap up, national politics comes to the state today.
Trump.
Donald Trump is in Springfield. Kasich's here in town eating in Billy Goat Burgers. How important is Illinois for the Republican Party?
Well, there's 21 delegates from Illinois, which is a big number. And if you want to be able to get to the majority number at the Republican convention, you got to get Illinois Republicans behind you. In fact, I think it's more than that. That's the Electoral College. There's a lot of delegates for the convention. I don't know what the number is, but it's a big number because Illinois is a big state. I think it's important in terms of winning the primary because there's a lot of Republican voters that are here. Certainly more important than winning Delaware. Is it important long term? Who knows? I think at this point,
that's the question.
They're all looking to win the primary.
Let's say Donald Trump wins the primary and he has to go against Hillary Clinton, the state of Illinois, is it up for grabs or is this a pretty blue state?
Illinois is a blue state now. And I think that it would be hard to find somebody to disagree with that. We have lots of Republican congressmen. We have lots of Republicans around the state. But the way that people vote nationally for president versus the way that they vote for other offices, we're starting to learn is different. And so I think that it would be very, very difficult for a Republican to beat a Democrat.
May not help Senator Kirk as well. Mike Fouché, AllTheTrack.com, subscription newsletter that covers all things Chicago politics and Illinois.
Awesome to be here.
Great to see you. Thanks
for
being
here.
It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, watching the Bears game out of the corner of my eye, watching a long-haired cornerback dance in the end zone for the San Diego Chargers. It's a good-looking head of hair, not going to lie, and I didn't catch a number on the guy because his hair was blocking the numbers, but not looking good for the hometown heroes right now. But we'll see. Oh, big play. Alshon Jeffrey down the sideline. Pete, you were actually at a game yesterday.
Yeah,
it was good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, great to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you, man.
It's we went to Dallas and went to go see a Cowboys game
because you're such a huge Cowboys fan.
I'm a huge Cowboys fan. I love the Cowboys. Love the boys. We dem boys.
Do they play that after every second down?
They do play that.
They
do play that.
Let's hear some we dem boys.
The main thing about that stadium, if you're familiar with football, watching it, they have this huge video screen in the middle of the stadium that is as big as, goes from like one end of Michigan Avenue to the other. It is like humongous. And we had some really nice seats in a club section, and all you do is you just can't help but look at that board.
You watch the board instead of watching the game?
Yeah. It's like almost impossible to look down on the field.
I remember early on in that stadium's history, because that's the biggest stadium in the NFL, you know, the state of the art Super Bowls forever.
Unbelievable.
Weren't they kicking the ball? Weren't they punting the ball off that thing accidentally? Like, did they switch? Did they move it up or something?
Yeah, they. Well, I'm not sure about that. I know we were kind of talking about that a little bit with the person that we went with, who's a season ticket holder, and he had mentioned something where, like, Jerry Jones gave, like, the punter like an incentive to, if, like, hey, if you hit the scoreboard, I'll give you $5,000 or something. So the punter was, like, trying to hit the scoreboard. I don't know much else about it, but nothing came close to hitting it yesterday.
Was it, I mean, you've been to Soldier Field. Like, what was it that much better?
Oh my God! It's like double the size.
And it started raining, right? It started drizzling. I saw that on the game last night. They were kind of making a joke about it.
Really? I didn't even notice.
They
I
said, guess like, because they had the roof open.
Yeah, it was like a
it's
little.
It's raining here. That's kind of weird. You can check the. And it was like.
I didn't even notice that. I mean,
cross promotion for Toyota.
It was. I mean, yeah, the stadium is like. Yeah, it's like a bucket list thing. If you like football, you have to go see it. I mean, it's like it's a campus. It's like a college campus. It's like so big, and the stadium's big, and then you know. With the video board they use, you know, like during the timeouts, they have all, you know, the kiss cam and all sorts of, you know, what the players do when, how do the players prepare for the game, which is one player was like, yeah, wake up, put on my headphones and bump Drake. That's how he prepares for the game. So we've been saying we're bumping Drake.
Drake. The one thing from watching the game on television, a lot of shots on Dez Bryant, a lot of shots on Greg Hardy. Two great, great exemplary Dallas Cowboys. But the both of them could not keep their jerseys tucked in. I was watching the game, and they both, like, by OT, that was an OT game, their shirt tails were, like, out, like they were playing, like on the side of the – I'm like, you can't do that. That's a 15-yard – like, tuck your shirt in.
Yeah.
You're that winded? Your shirt came untucked?
I think they pull them out.
You think,
you know,
they,
just like too, how the Brewers
boys,
did. Yeah, and I had, and I felt bad too because I was in my fantasy league. I was like I was like 9 points ahead going into that game, and I had Dez Bryant, or the person that I was beating had Dez Bryant. So I was in the position of being with this nicest guy. Who took us to this game? Who, you know, left his wife home so we could enjoy the game? Like the, you know, a true blue Cowboy fan, you know, loves the Cowboys, and me sitting next to him, you know, rooting against, you know, his team because I don't want Dez Bryant to do anything.
He could just say, "I just don't want him. I want the other guy. I want Jason Witten to get all the fame tonight."
And Cole Beasley or whatever that guy. He had a couple of touchdowns.
You don't see it. Maybe you do because it's such a great stadium, but he's got the dumbest mustache in football.
Cole Beasley?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a really dumb mustache.
Jimmy Fallon does this bit, like, with the teams that are playing on Sunday night where he does late-night superlatives, and he has pictures of each player, and then he says, you know, like, this person is was voted most likely to, and Cole Beasley was most likely to gargle with Coors Light. And it's, like, perfect. If you've seen Cole Beasley, it's, like, perfect.
He kind of looks like Cole Beasley looked like Duncan Keith looks like when it's like game four of the Stanley Cup when he's grown that beard and the hair out.
Yeah, you know? and he has it's like a wet hair look too. Yeah.
Nothing better than the wet hair, long hair, wet football player look.
It's fun though. If you have a chance, get down there. Right. You like football?
I do.
The boys?
Hey, I am boy. I don't know how you would say that. We dem boys. I'm the boy. All right, and whatever.
Yeah. Okay. You the boy.
Carrie Brownstein's coming up after the news. Very excited to talk to her about her memoir. And we'll talk to her about growing up in the suburbs of Seattle and also about her influences in the punk rock Riot Girl movement up in Seattle and in Washington. And then also about Slater Kinney. That's coming up here on The Download on WGN. Stay with us.
This is a download on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, musician Carrie Brownstein's out with a new memoir. It's called Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl. It chronicles her life in music, growing up outside Seattle, coming of age in punk rock, and ultimately playing guitar for the legendary trio Slater-Kinney. In recent years, Brownstein turned to writing and acting for the small screen. She's a co-creator and star alongside Fred Armisen in one of the best shows on television, the IFC hit Portlandia. Carrie Brownstein, welcome to the download.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to talk to you, and the book's great. Why a memoir? Why write your story in this form?
Well, I wanted to tell the story of my journey from a place of feeling like I didn't belong and kind of finding a sense of community and self through music. And Slater-Kinney and music specifically was kind of a better container for that story. It served the arc better. And that's a little bit behind me, even though Slater-Kinney is up and running again. I kind of wanted to tell everything up until, you know, that point. And so I felt like I had some perspective on it. Mm-hmm. So I know that a lot of people wait and write their memoirs in their 50s or 60s, but that part of my journey I felt like was kind of already there, and I wanted to write about it and share it.
It's a great story, and gives us a little bit better understanding of who you are, but also really tackles some of the aspects of music from, you know, joining a band to touring, but also fandom. You talk about early in the book about nostalgia. It's interesting. Why don't we talk about the first concert you went to? You went to see Madonna, and then you also went to see George Michael. And it was at that George uh-huh. that you write about at that George Michael show that you really saw a change in how you were a fan, and instead of being a fan, you wanted to be on stage.
Yeah, I remember that I went to see George Michael. It was the Faith tour, so sometime in the late '80s, and I went with a group of girls, a group of my friends, and they just were fawning over George Michael. Oh, he's so hot. Everyone, you know, that was very common at the time. He was sort of this sex symbol singing these sexy songs. And, you know, I just thought, gosh, I mean, I'm so much less interested in wanting to be with George Michael. I would rather, you know, be George Michael. I want to be the one up there. I want to be the person upon whose, you know, the audience is projecting their longing and longings and imagination and whatnot. And, you know, just in terms of my desire to perform, my desire to be understood, my desire to, you know, express my story through creativity, that's really, early on I realized that I was as interested in being a fan and participant as I was in being a progenitor of those things. Mm-hmm.
You know, in this book, I mean, you really do get personal with your story. You're growing up outside of Seattle and Redmond. A lot of this is about your childhood, your mother's illness, your father's sexuality. In music, you know, you use lyrics to tell your story, a lot of metaphor, maybe keep it in the abstract. When you're writing a memoir, you really have to hit those stories head on. How difficult was it for you to write these very, I don't want to classify them as painful, but, you know, these stories about your childhood in this kind of way?
Well, you know, even if the content is personal or painful, when you're sitting down to write, you're really approaching it from craft and from a sense of creating structure and architecture, working on a narrative. And it is much more intentional and deliberate than just, say, you know, spilling your heart out in a diary. So I think because you're focusing on syntax and flow and tempo and chronology, you know, it really is just about the craft of writing and sitting down and doing it. So, I had some experience writing essays and short form mm-hmm. pieces, but the challenge was just the length of it and trying to, you know, just really just sit down and assess the task at hand every day. It took a lot of discipline and rigor, but I just try to write about vignettes and experiences that really serve the broader themes of the book. And so that helped, just to have kind of know what the container of the story was and try to fill it accordingly.
You know, there's a lot about your coming up in music, punk rock scene in Seattle. You talk about seeing Nirvana open up for Mudhoney, those kind of things. But you really focus on one band in particular as an inspiration, Bikini Kill. Talk about what about Bikini Kill drew you to music and inspired you to keep going.
Sure. Well, Well, I'll contextualize it a little bit in that, you know, when I first discovered punk and indie rock, first, as many people do, you kind of go back to the beginning. So I was, you know, finding records by The Clash and The Ramones, Television, Wire, and that music really spoke to me and in one way. And then all of a sudden I heard this band coming out of Olympia, which was about an hour south of where I was growing up, called Bikini Kill. And, you know, it was just this heavy, intense music with unapologetic lyrics about the female experience. And it was, you can't underestimate the feeling of hearing your story told for the first time, hearing somebody singing about experiences that you could relate to in your younger self, which is usually a less articulate self. You know, to have somebody kind of sing your own perspective, you know, for the first time is a very enlightening experience. You feel seen and you feel recognized. And so that was very life-changing for me. And at the time, it felt radical within the context of punk and indie music to have these very unabashed female stories that were not always happy. In fact, were often, you know, dark and harrowing or a little scary, really enter the landscape. So that was a very galvanizing experience for me.
And I also liked in the book how you said that they were the pioneers of the questions that the media didn't have to ask you, that they didn't have to ask. What's it like to be a woman playing in a rock band? Because Bikini Kill kind of took that on.
Yeah, you always are grateful for the people who come before you, the early adopters, and, you know, the early creators of a movement. I think for better or worse are the ones that bear the brunt of some of that misunderstanding. So that by the time, and of course there were bands before Bikini Kill too like this, but by the time Slater Kinney came around, that topic had entered the conversation a little bit more. Those themes, you know, had permeated culture a little bit more. So we were lucky that we got to focus on the music a little bit, and people really assessed us as a band and sort of less modifiers and identifiers in front of our name, you know.
We're talking with Carrie Brownstein, her memoir, Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl. Let's talk about Slater Kinney before we wrap up here. Obviously, you know, you'd played in different bands. You'd been in the punk rock and indie rock scene. Slater Kinney's less of a band and the way you write it, more of a family. Talk about how important that was for you and finding a place like Slater Kinney to land.
Sure. I mean, you know, in addition, yeah, to the fact that we literally were a band and, you know, a group of people focusing on writing and recording and touring, the band was a place I sought refuge. And those dynamics are very analogous to familial ones. It was kind of the first place I felt a sense of home and stability and kind of unconditional support, which were things that I had lacked in my childhood. And, you know, Slater Kinney really became kind of one of the first substitutions for me for family and one of the most crucial ones. And I think because it was also a creative outlet, you know, it allowed me such growth in terms of, you know, becoming a better person, a more embodied person, someone more in touch with my feelings, whether that was just through the support of Korn and Janet or through our music. And often, as I describe in the book, through performance itself and kind of allowing for this physicality and kind of a way into my body that I had kind of shut off from in my earlier years just on account of self-protection.
The band ended, I guess it ended in 2006, but you made a triumphant return this year. For you, what's next for Slater Kinney? Is the band back together? Is the experience the same? Or was this sort of a reunion jog of 2015?
No, I think we were very adamant that we didn't want to couch things in kind of those reunion terms. I mean, technically, yes, we reunited, but we really wanted to come back with a new album. And we were fortunate that people were drawn to it, and it gave us a sense of relevance in the here and now instead of, you know, people just kind of looking back through the lens of nostalgia. So it does feel like we're kind of in the second iteration of the band and we want to keep playing. I think we'll be less, you know, rigorous in terms of getting onto that hamster wheel schedule of when you're writing and then recording and touring for 2 years. I think none of us have the desire to do that, but I think we are excited at some point to start writing another record and get back in the studio. I just think there'll be more time in between albums.
There's so much in here we didn't get to. I wanted to talk, you know, more about touring, your philosophy on touring, which is fascinating. The memoir is Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl, Carrie Brownstein. Carrie Brownstein, thanks so much for joining us here on The Download tonight.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 10:30 tonight, maybe even earlier, depending on when this game. Although I think it's on, I think we're right on schedule for this game. But coming up post the Hamp and OB show with Glenn Kozlowski, Kaz. I would love, you know what we should have done, Pete? We should have put a camera or a microphone up in the conference room where they're watching the game.
Oh, yes.
That was a mistake on our part. Because you know they're in the building somewhere because they did pre.
Yeah.
And so you know that they're right now up in a conference room watching this right now going, come on! Come on!
Yeah. They should always do like a secondary audio track on your TV where you can tune in to hear.
Should just watch them watch the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like put a web, I think all these different webcams and things.
Ugh.
That would be great. You could do it as a giveaway too. We could do like a contest. Like the eighth caller gets to watch the game with Hamp and OB.
Oh my God!
I think we just do that for the silent auction. I don't think we just give that one away. I think you got to pay for that.
Yeah,
you got to pay like that's a silver circle. Mm-hmm. That's 50 grand.
Yeah, it's fun even knowing that they're up here watching. Now that
really
you say
is.
That, you know that like they're just like getting angry.
There was just an incomplete pass, and you know that like Phillip Rivers just threw it out of bounds, and you know that they just flipped out. Just a regular second down, and they just flipped out.
Even when you just listen to the promos, how like exciting, how excited they get about like the Bears and the mistakes and.
Didn't we had OB in here when we did the big table with him a while back, and it was great because you'd just be asking him a question about the Bears, and then about the third sentence, and he'd be like, "We gotta play with pride," and he gets so heartfelt and angry.
It was the best.
Yeah. I had a hard time not to sort of giggling.
Got to get Hamp in here for the big table.
Yeah, that's got to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the 85 Bears, obviously with their big 30 year here, Otis Wilson. There's going to be a guest of ours coming up this week at the big table. We're
going
to talk to Otis about his time with the Chicago Bears, living in Chicago, about the sport, about some of the things around the sport. So we'll talk with Otis Wilson coming up this week.
Awesome.
That's going to be great. Also, Jay Cutler will not be on the show, but he is now the all-time leading passer touchdowns for Chicago Bears.
Passes.
So touchdowns. Right,
but he
passed Sid Luckman.
Oh yeah,
with the Martellus Bennett touchdown in the first quarter, he is now the all-time leading. I should know this, but I think it's all-time leading Pat. Like I think because he scored the touchdown, it's touchdowns.
Yeah,
but I guess that's the stat. And so it's just ridiculous that he is now the leading quarterback in the history of Chicago football.
And Sid Luckman was number two, you know, who hasn't played in forever.
Craig Krenzel was three, which is just. I think Eric Kramer's probably three.
Eric Kramer was probably up there. He had a couple of good years.
And all it takes. Shane Matthews is like number six. That's never a good sign.
Ugh.
I watched so much football yesterday. I had like a man cave day where I just watched Red Zone and I watched football, and it was too much.
Too much?
By the time I got to the Cowboys-Eagles game, and even watching a little bit out of the corner of my eye with this one, I'm like, it's all the same, just different colors. Like it's like, oh, red and blue and running and football and long hair.
I found that with playing fantasy football, I couldn't even tell you the scores of half the game.
Yeah, right.
Like normally I would tell you, I knew exactly who won and lost and everything. Now I don't even know who won the Pittsburgh Raiders game. I don't know, but I know that my quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, got hurt.
Yeah, he did get hurt. 38-35, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Steelers. That was a good game. That was a great game. Antonio Brown had like over 200 yards receiving. It's interesting though, like doing the show and obviously opposite a Bears game, which is strange because I'm a big Bears fan. But after watching all that football yesterday, I'm like, oh God, I'm done with football. I mean, the obviously the Bears are 2-5. It doesn't look like they're going to make the playoffs this year, so make an easy decision.
Done with football for the season?
I'm getting close. I just feel like maybe I'll show up again for the playoffs. You know, like just throw it all away. Just concentrate on doing like the arts, you know. Just do some arts.
The arts.
Yeah, like maybe some clay. Just have a couple of Sundays where I just...
You can be like Tony Romo in that commercial where he... Doesn't he do a pottery or something or crafting of some
sort? He's baking muffins, right. I think.
Oh, is that what it is?
Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Doing well.
So how about you? Are you a bit, I mean, for you, for football, I mean, do you get to a point where it's just saturation where you're like, okay, enough football, I'll catch up at the playoffs? Or you get excited about this time of the year?
I'd like to get into a saturation sort of situation because that means I actually have a Sunday available to myself to sit down until my eyeballs fall out, but I haven't reached that point yet this year. So
I had one of those yesterday, and I was visiting a friend in Fort Collins, and we watched football. Friend, they started early there, like it's a 11 o'clock start or 10 o'clock start, and then it goes all. I watched to the end of that overtime game, and I depressed myself. Was so, and not to mention the college football from Saturday. It was like 20 hours straight of football, and I don't want to. I'm done with it.
Like, you've got like queso stains on your T-shirt.
Exactly.
You know, you can't possibly drink another light beer. You know,
it really was. It's like what we did. We went.
I mean,
to
you got gout by the end of the day. For God's sake, you had so much beer.
I feel like I was like, oh, something's wrong. Something's wrong. We went to the Jersey Mike's and got a couple of like the big footlong sandwiches, and that was for both days. So add that on top of it. So when it gets to like 7 o'clock at night on Sunday, and you're like, can I have another one of those cold cut combos? And it was just like so much. It was a well prepared football weekend that really wasn't thought out by the end because it was madness. It really was madness. But I'm back. So enough football coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. We're not going to talk football. We're going to talk with Steve Dolinsky, ABC7's Hungry Hound, about his pizza quest. He got sick of seeing these top 10 lists of best pizza, worst pizza, that kind of stuff, and he just put together the most definitive list. He went to over 75 different pizza joints in the last month. We talked to him a couple weeks ago when he's in the process of it, so we'll talk to him about the final product. And also Jack Silverstein, Download's statistician, be here to do the Bulls fan jam. My question I would ask is, who did the best complain for a foul/non-foul? That would be my question to Jack. Like, who was it? Like, I call it the Carlos Boozer. Like, at what point, who did that? What, me? Oh, me? I didn't even touch him. Like, I want to know who did that. That'd be a good fan jam question, right? You know, because that's all basketball is now. Every play that goes down, the whistle blows, and then someone complains. Like, that is not, that's how basketball works. And then coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, before we give it over to Hamp, OB, and Kaz, we're going to talk to, we're going to hear live music from Mooners. So that's going to be great coming up. So Download here on WGN. Stay with us. I don't want to be no personal pizza. I just want to live my life. I don't want to eat no personal pizza. Baby, give me just one slice. Oh, Pete Zimmerman, classic, finds a good pizza song. So Download here on WGN, I'm Justin Kaufman, with you till 10:30 tonight, the Hamp and OB show with Kaz, Mark Harmon coming up here, 10:30 after the Monday Night Football game in San Diego, the Bears and the Chargers. Right now, it is halftime, the Chargers lead 16-7, but you never know, this could be the year that the Bears resemble a second half team. And seen what they've done in the last couple of weeks, including against the Raiders and the Chiefs, and losing efforts against the Vikings and the Lions. But, you know, maybe they're good with the halftime adjustments. We'll see. So that's coming up. Also, coming up at 10 o'clock, we're going to have live music, Power Pop, the Mooners. Mooners. In town, Mooner is the band. We'll be in studio playing live to sort of lead us into the Hamp and OB show. So it's coming up. I think the story goes like this. Steve Dolinsky, ABC7's food reporter, didn't like the lists that were being made about Chicago pizza. You know, top 10's this, top 10 that, top 10 best pizzas with sausage on it. So instead of being snarky on Twitter, which is just what you do now, Steve got to work on the most definitive, authoritative, comprehensive Chicagoland pizza list that anyone in this area has ever seen. He came on a few weeks ago in the middle of it. Now he's finished. You can find the whole thing at stevedolinsky.com. He's with me tonight. Steve, good to talk to you.
Hey, Justin. Good to talk to you, too.
Are you
in the middle of a pizza.
I was going to say, are you pizzaed out, man? This is like, are you never going to eat pizza again?
Never, but I'm definitely going to take a hiatus. I need a little break. I've had more carbs and cheese and tomato sauce than any human being should ingest in a 2-month period.
Well, let's talk about it. Did I get the story right? I mean, what sort of compelled you to do this?
You were absolutely right. I read some lame list online about like the 7 hottest pizza places in Chicago right now. One of them hadn't even opened yet. And I disagreed with another one of them I had pizza with that week with my family. And I just said, this is ridiculous. Every other week there's some best top 7, top 10, whatever. And I don't think the writers actually leave their couches. I think they just, it's looking at pictures of other people and it's like, well, this guy said it's great. And I said, you know, enough already. I did the Italian beef thing back in March and I hit 31 places and I feel like I've got my hands around the beef situation. And I said, I'm going to do pizza. And so I figured I'll take a month. I'll take the month of August. I'll hit 30 days. I'll hit like 30 to 35 places or so. And as I started going out and writing about places and documenting them and putting them on social media, I was getting a lot of feedback. I mean, a ton of feedback. You forgot this place. Don't forget about this place. On and on. And it ended up becoming 76 places.
76 places.
76 places. And still the people are beating me up for not going to Phil's in Oak Lawn and Villa this and, you know, Italian that. And, of course, you know, it's a big city. It's a big region. And, you know, so Al's in Warrenville. And I was like, come on, you're 4 miles from, like, the Fox River. You know, I got to limit it at some point, you know. So I had 76 places. About 50 were thin. About 20-plus were thick or deep. And I did the ordering the same way every time. So I figured, you know, I want to do apples to apples. I didn't want to go to a fancy place where they do indugia sausage and burrata cheese and then compare that to a sausage pizza. So I said every place will be the same, half sausage, half pepperoni. And if it is kind of a more of a Neapolitan-style place or what I termed an artisan joint, I would then order the margherita, the baseline, yeah, the tomato sauce, the cheese, you know, the basil. And I came up with categories based on what I hit and what I tasted. And really, you know, in Chicago, you think, oh, there's deep and there's pan. Well, I think it's really just deep. And then they say that there's thin and there's tavern style, which is the square cut and the thin, crispy crust. But there's also artisan. And this is a new thing that's happened in the last 7-8 years, I think, in Chicago. Pizzas that have a much longer fermentation time to really develop character. They're wetter doughs, so they have a lot of steam and air pockets when you bake them. Nicer toppings, nicer ingredients. And so artisan thin became one of the categories, in addition to Neapolitan, which is the traditional
and
Italian.
And, you know, for you, you've covered this stuff for a long time, and you know that Chicago is obviously a pizza town, and there's always comparisons to New York City, which, you know, sort of holds court when it comes to the pizza place in the country. But Chicago, this has sort of become the main food that this town, you know, sort of rallies around.
It is. It's universal, first of all. I think beefs can be unwieldy for people. And I'm not sure why. I mean, I think, you know, hot dogs are just all kind of uniform. They're all the same from the Vienna beef plant. And so pizzas can be more individual, more personalized. You can really, they vary so much. You know, 76 pizzas I had, yeah, but I mean, there are so many dozens of styles, you know, from the type of crust to the type of cheese. The sauces are all different and have different spices. When people say New York-style pizza, first of all, I just think of cardboard and sort of greasy cheese that you fold the cardboard in half and you eat it at like 2 in the morning after a night out. I don't think of, I mean, there are places like DeFaro's and there's, you know, Motorino that have nicer pizzas. But in general, when they say, you know, buy the slice joints, I don't think of something that is pleasurable that I want to eat time and again all day long. I think of something that's kind of like sort of just a gut filler. And a lot of the Chicago pizza, I just think it's fantastic. I mean, there are some buy the slice joints, but I stayed away from the buy the slice because I didn't want to make that part of the quest. Because I wanted to limit it to just sort of thin and thick. If I went to all the restaurants that had a pizza oven, I would never finish this. So, and unfortunately, places like Cortino and Piccolo Sogno and Bellina, they're nice restaurants with pizza ovens and they do nice pizzas, but, you know, I got to limit it to places that do most of, you know, more than half of what they do is pizza.
I was going to say, because pizza ends up on almost every menu, whether or not any Italian restaurant, there's some sort of pizza element.
Of course. And even if they don't have a wood-burning brick oven, they have an electric oven. Most places have a deck oven or a stone oven, and it's gas-fired or electric. And you know, so anybody can do pizza, and I just figured I got to try to limit it somehow. And so I tried to focus on places that really were known for doing pizza, have been doing pizza for a while. Well, not even for a while. I mean, there was some brand new place I did that came out way up on top. And just because 76 was about as much as I could do. I mean, I honestly could probably hit another 20, and I probably will go back to another dozen because there are about
a dozen
hit
100,
that came
man.
Up. Yeah, I got to hit 100.
You got to hit
100. Do a book.
That's you're right. A book, yeah, that'd be great. All right, Steve Dolinsky, ABC7, Hungry Hound, on the line with us. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's go through which one of these places dominated. Let's find out who Steve Dolinsky picked for the best pizzas in the thick category and the thin. We'll do tavern. We'll do some suburbs. We'll just rattle through. Does that sound good, Steve?
Okay.
All right, hold on.
Pizza Monster.
It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With me, Steve Dolinsky from ABC 7, The Hungry Hound, which you just had a time change, right? I saw that in the paper that you are moving to, what is it, Fridays and Saturdays? What is it?
It's now Fridays at 4 p.m., which is a little bit longer show, so we have more flexibility in a one-hour show as opposed to a half hour. So Fridays at 4 p.m. and Saturdays still at 10 p.m.
Fridays at 4 and Saturdays at 10. I liked you on Friday nights. But I'm not a programmer.
Thanks. So. Well, yeah. What do I know?
What do you know? You're no James Ward.
Exactly. He's got better. He had better glasses than I did.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the Pizza Quest. All right. I got people saying, "Did you go to?" Somebody just texted in, "Did you go to Grandstands up in Franklin Park?" So it's just never going to stop, Steve. It's never going to stop.
I believe I did go to Grandstand in Franklin Park. Yeah. You know, I did. I'm pulling up all of my top five lists.
How can you keep them apart?
There were so many of them, but I want to just see because I know I went there. I want to just double check it because I know people are just passionate about pizza, and you know this. And I felt like I would respond to a lot of social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and if I saw like five or six tweets or posts about, hey, you should go to Anemone Cafe in Palos or, you know, Antica in Andersonville, then I would do it. You know, then I would just go out there. And typically I would call ahead of time and I would say, hi, what is your specialty? What are you known for? And if they said, you know, double crust or thick or tavern or whatever, that's what I would order. I wouldn't tell them that I was coming. I would just get a small half sausage, half pepperoni, and whatever their specialty was. So Grandstand Pizza, yes, their style is tavern, 9718 West Grand Avenue in Franklin Park. And I had a 12-inch thin half sausage, half pepperoni. It cost $12.50. And it's kind of a pizza row over there on Grand Avenue. There's a lot of pizza joints. And I know they've won kind of a local best thin crust, but I found the dough a little bit too tough. That was one of my comments I had here. A little bit too tough.
All right, what do you got for?
By the way, but let me just say this: the dough is the most important thing, Justin. Anybody can put, you know, good Greco sausage, Anacchini sausage, good cheese, you know, homemade sauce. The dough is the most important thing, and you find lots of times people leave the dough edges, the little ends of the crusts on the plate, sort of like bones from an archaeological dig.
Right.
If you see that, that's not a good sign. You know, the dough is. You want to eat the dough.
That's me. I do that all the time. I think it's more about because I've eaten too much pizza, and I think like I'm maybe doing the right thing for my diet by not eating the crusts. I don't know what I'm doing.
If it's a good pizza, you should be devouring it. Okay, so what do you want to know?
All right, let's go with the thin. Give me the top three on thins.
Okay, well, wait a second. You want city or suburbs?
Let's go city. We're going to do this kind of like boom, 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 and we're going to try to get as many pizza places in so we can sort of get this authoritative. So let's do best in Chicago.
My number five in the city is Capone's Trattoria. They're at 7419 West Irving Park.
Okay.
They do a couple different styles there, but I really like their style up in the Dunning neighborhood. Really blistered, yeasty, chewy crust. Nice ratio. Ratio is important to me, by the way. Crust to cheese to dough, very important. You don't want to bite into a mouthful of bread.
Yeah.
Pizza Sirio, number 4, 1708 West Belmont, more sort of Neapolitan-ish thin, but they have a nice, a really serious oven. It's gas-fired, but doesn't mean anything in terms of like lack of quality. Anacchini Brothers sausage, pepperoni, lots of oregano on top, a good chew. Salerno's Pizza, number 3, 1201 West Grand in the city.
Yep.
Lots of people said you got to go to Salerno's. I really loved it. Just really delicious and crispy. Made an audible crunch when I bit into it. Pizza Rustica, number 2, 3908 North Sheridan, not far from Wrigley. Kind of an interesting, more of a rectangular style pie, served on a wooden pizza peel. I really liked extremely delicious bites. They let it rise for about 3.5 hours to ferment. Secret process, wouldn't divulge. Number one in the city, the Boiler Room in Logan Square, beneath the California Avenue Blue Line stop. I was really surprised. Didn't expect much. Looks like a tavern. But man, they let the dough rest quite a bit. They've got kind of this garlicky and spicy sausage mix. They do whole milk mozzarella and provolone there combination. Delicious.
Okay, so how about really, okay, give us some suburbs.
All right, thin pizza in the suburbs, number five. By the way, I've got maps for all these as well on my website, stevedelinsky.com. Number five is Brick's Wood-Fired Pizza out in Naperville. They've got a couple locations, Lombard and Wheaton as well. They're going to open in Lincoln Park soon. Kind of a Neapolitan-ish looking pizza, but definitely a thin, in the thin category. Pretty good chew. I thought it could use more salt when I was there, but I like that. Cousins on Oak Park Avenue in Tinley Park. This is a chef used to be at the Park Grill, Bernie Laskowski, classically trained, but really delicious in Tinley Park in a little strip mall. I thought it was delicious. Armand's Pizza, you know, of course, legendary Armand's, started in Elmwood Park. They now have a little takeout place there, but I went to the one in Elmhurst. There are a couple locations. And you could say it's really tavern. I think it's thin slash tavern, but delicious whole milk mozzarella on every pie, just canned tomatoes, ground in-house with oregano and Parmesan. Palermo's 95th, number two, down in Oak Lawn. Kind of a sweeter sauce.
Pizzeria.
South Side tends to be a little bit sweeter for some reason. This was a really deep red sauce, but I didn't mind it. But again, a good crispy chew crust. And then Freddy's Pizza, number one in Cicero. I've always loved their gelato. I never knew I liked their thin pizza so much.
That's Freddy's a good place.
A nice job. Yep.
Those are great. Those are the thins. And now obviously we still have the thicks to get through. We don't have a lot of time. So why don't we do this?
Okay.
Why don't we do three? You pick the thicks for both three of the city and three of the suburbs.
Let me do this quickly, though. Top five, you got Neapolitan, you got tavern style. You're forgetting all this stuff. You don't do any of these other things?
You could go to stevedelinsky.com to get those.
All right. Okay, so we're not going to talk about tavern style
or Neapolitan. I love so tavern style, about, man. Tavern style is my thing, too.
Of course, Vito and Nick's, you know, down in South Pulaski. Villanova and Stickney is amazing for tavern style. Okay, and Barnaby's up in north. Okay, so my these are my deep dish in the suburbs. I'll just give you my top three. Okay. Well, Lou's was number four, because Lou's is everywhere, and they're still good. Old World Pizza in Elmwood Park on West North Avenue for number three. Luisa's Pizza and Pasta down in Crestwood for number two. That's a real hidden gem, dark horse. The woman who started it, by the way, worked at Dewey's for 20 years. Pizza Barra in Oakbrook was my number one deep dish in the suburbs. I thought they do a fit. It's kind of a blend of a Pequod's caramelized outside crust with a really fantastic Chicago-style deep dish. It was really addictive. I couldn't stop eating it, and I'm not a huge deep dish fan. Deep dish in the city. Let's see, number five, I had Lou's was my number five. Pequod's, number four.
Yeah.
Now, people say, oh, you should be number one. Honestly, look at the pictures on my website. It's a lot of dough. It's the ratio's out of whack.
Yeah, that's my problem with all that pizza, right?
Too much dough. Paisano's,
dough.
Number three.
Oh, yeah, I like
too
Paisano's,
cheesy.
Yeah.
Paisano's is good, yeah. Kind of a not necessarily buttery, but it tastes buttery. And then my pie, number two. Everybody forgets Mai Pai. They've been around since the 70s.
Yeah,
they
right.
used to be huge around the country. But their sauce was really amazing, really highly seasoned, much better than most sauces. And then Bartoli's in Roscoe Village up on 1955 West Addison was my number one deep dish
right,
in the
right.
city. And his grandfather, by the way, was the co-founder of Gino's East. So he was
basically trying
to recreate his grandfather's recipe from like way back when.
You got a pizza family tree going on here.
It's just like the Italian beef world. It's all this sort of like, you know, Venn diagram. Everybody's connected in pizza.
Well, give us one good thick suburbs and then we'll let it go.
One thick in the suburbs. I did all those.
The
Pizza Bar. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just talked about the Pizza Barra and Luisa's.
Yeah, sorry. You didn't. I'm right. All right. So.
I went too fast for you.
Yeah, No. You got it. All right, Steve Delinsky, as your tagline says, always hungry, seldom speechless. I'm just afraid for you. I know you to be a very healthy guy, and I know you to be. I mean, you must be going to the gym like three times a day to work this stuff off.
I'm definitely working more than I used to. Yeah, it was a lot of work, man. But it was, you know, good. It was a good effort, and I liked the people really, really passionate about it.
Well, the SteveDolinsky.com, if you go there, you can see all of the lists. I mean, it really is the definitive, authoritative, comprehensive pizza list for the city of Chicago and the suburbs. Steve Dolinsky, great work, and thanks for coming on, bud.
Thanks for having me, man.
Give it all you got. Take your very best shot and may the best team win. Time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see how the ball's gonna bounce today.
Another great tune from Pete Zimmerman. I missed it. Justin Kaufman here on the download, WGN. Well, the Bears are currently losing to the San Diego Chargers, 16-7. They got a second and 11 here in the third quarter. They were driving, but Robbie Gould missed a field goal. That's a bummer. But they're driving again, so hopefully we may see a Bears comeback. But you know what? Right now, they're not the only Chicago sports team on display tonight. The Bulls are in Philly, and we thought since we had so much fun last month with our coverage of the Cubs, we thought we'd take the same fan jam approach to the Bulls. So we're going to be bringing you a fan's perspective of each Bulls regular season game. See, the fan will watch a full game, so you at home, you don't have to. And it's not how many points D-Rose scored or how many rebounds Taj Gibson pulled in. Nah. It's more like who had the most wide-open shot and missed it, you know? That's always my favorite. Like, all the play works, and Doug McDermott's wide open, and he just misses it. Or, who had the coolest haircut? You know, it seems like there's a lot of cool haircuts on the Philadelphia 76ers. Or, who is the best Whitney Young alumni on the court? I'm guessing I know the answer to that. Jack Silverstein is a writer at SB Nation. He's also a download regular. He's our statistician. Jack, good to talk to you.
Yeah, Justin, how are you?
Good. So you watched the whole game, huh?
I did the whole thing.
So first off, you know what? Give us the tone of the game.
Yeah. So a buddy of mine who's got a Bulls podcast at the Bulls Show Saturday night during the T-Wolves game, he tweeted facetiously, "You're not going to believe this, but the same Bulls roster as last year is underachieving against lottery teams."
Yeah, right.
And for the first half, that's how it felt. I mean, we went up big, like 31-17. They came back, and it wasn't really until the second half where we started to put it on them. And you're just watching this going, like, why is this 0-6 team? I don't care if they're at home. Why is this 0-6 team hanging with the supposedly, you know, second-best team in the East? So that was a little unnerving, but after a while, we got it going. Bulls had six players in double figures. Nico had 20. Doug McDermott started. He had a nice game. He had 18. Garrett played okay. Some nice buckets off the bench for Snell and Bobby Portis, the rookie. So, you know, we got it rolling after a little bit.
All right, there we go. That sounds like a good. Yeah. So Bulls win in Philadelphia.
Bulls win.
For you, what was the stat of the game? When you talk about, I mean, obviously, you know, points and rebounds, things like that. But for you, a statistician at heart, what was the stat of this game?
Yeah, well, I got two for you. One is that Jahlil Okafor, the Chicago product, looked great, and yet he scored 21 points on 25 shots.
Ooh.
He was 9 of 25. Pau Gasol had some nice interior D on him, 6 blocks. But the kid is just – he's got a lot of polish. He's got a lot of polish on his rebounding and on his – post game and on his face up game. He can, you know, dribble through the legs, and he's got handles like a guard. Had 15 boards game high. So everything that he was doing impressed me, even though he had a really, you know, terrible shooting night. The other one was that Joakim Noah was slated to make his first start of the season. He was announced as a starter, and then during warmups, he tweaked his left knee, the one he had surgery on, and told coaches that he was not good to go. So Mirotić went back into the starting lineup. But Noah was set to get his first start of the season, and didn't happen.
You know, I don't know much about the Philadelphia 76ers except for the fact that they were sort of – there was a a rumor that they were tanking last year to get the best pick, that they were one of those teams that and they have collected all of these number one picks over the years. Are we seeing that? Are the Philadelphia 76ers getting closer to being an NBA team? Because as you said, they were 0-6 coming into this game.
I think they're getting closer because of Okafor. He is real, real good. He's going to be an all-star within three seasons, if not next year. He's polished. What can I say? I mean, you're not seeing a lot of big men who actually have a face-up game, a post-up game, or post moves. I mean, he has a variety of – he reminds me a little bit of Kevin McHale down low.
Are the other guys just bombs? Or what about the last 4 years? It feels like the 76ers have picked one of the biggest guys out of college every year.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, they had you're right. I mean, they've been picking at the top of the draft pretty consistently, but they've been sort of unsure. I mean, they made one of the weirdest trades last year where they traded the previous year's rookie of the year.
Yeah,
to
right.
Milwaukee, Michael Carter-Williams. So I don't know that anybody really knows what's going on in Philly, but what I can tell you is that Okafor he's good.
Well, we love to hear that in Chicago.
He's real good.
Whitney Young product just 2 years ago playing high school ball here in Chicago.
Right.
Jack Silverstein is he's a writer for SB Nation, but he's also the download statistician. He's watched the Bulls game tonight, so we didn't have to. Let's take a quick break, Jack. When we come back, the big questions everybody wants to know: what did Stacey King say tonight?
Yeah.
And then also, I'd love to get a couple more questions, including, you know, my favorite, and I hope you have an answer for this one: the best layup that should have been a dunk. I feel like in every game there's a great layup that should have been a dunk. That's regular season basketball. Stay with us here on the download. Some unique music there to bring us back to the Bulls fan jam tonight. The Bulls beat the 76ers in Philadelphia. It started off strong, then it got a little soft, but then they finished strong, the Chicago Bulls, with the victory. Jack Silverstein, he watched the game tonight, so we didn't have to. There's a lot of regular season basketball. It's tough to watch some of these games, especially like games like this where I think the start time was, 6 o'clock, 5:30 or something like that?
Yeah, it was a 6 o'clock game.
Yeah, it's just always going to be hard, these kind of games. But I'm glad that we got guys like you, Jack, that'll suck it up for the team.
Sure.
Get home as fast as you can so you can watch the Sixers and the Bulls.
That's right.
All right, so let's talk about some of the more interesting things that we know must have happened during the game. And one name for you, Stacey King. What did Stacey King have to say tonight?
So this was a really interesting experience for me because I was at a bar. I wanted to be able to catch some of the Bears games as well. And I couldn't convince them to turn the volume up. But what that meant was that I got to watch the subtitle writer react to Stacey King and try to keep up with his because here's one thing you miss if you don't hear is you don't get Stacey's groans. The subtitler does not type in the "oh gosh, no, ah, come on." Disappointment. But Stacey did have four uses of his trademark yell after a three-point bucket by the Bulls. Bang, bang, bang.
Okay, good.
And the subtitler did type all the bangs. The subtitler did mess up. Stacey's got the mouse in the house,
yes.
Free cheese. Well, he wrote flea cheese. Maybe like the cheese is running away.
Right.
Stacey complimented Neil on his silky voice.
Good.
While reading an ad, the best Stacey Kingism of the night, though, was not during the game. It was, we're playing in Philly, so you're sort of contractually obligated to show some sort of close-up clip of someone making a cheesesteak.
Yep, absolutely.
So Stacey, in his normal, teleprompter voice, goes, "All right, hold on, freeze it. Freeze it right there. Hold on." And then there's a pause. And then he goes, "This man is not wearing any gloves." And he, circles the guy's bare hands with the teleprompter.
He used the telecaster.
Yeah. Freeze it. Freeze it right here. Freeze it. This man, I don't care who it is, this man's not wearing gloves.
Oh, okay, that's hilarious. All right.
And then he goes, "Okay, roll it." And then they rolled it. And then he kept on making making all the cheap.
You know, that has been I'm with Stacey a little bit on that. I remember watching one time there was a I don't know what it was. It was some sort of hot dog thing, you know, and they're like, the best hot dogs in Chicago, and it showed this guy just grabbing the hot dog with his hand, putting it in the bun, putting everything on it, and then handing it to the guy, and they're like, those are great hot dogs. I'm like, yeah, that's a lot of hands, man. I don't know. Yeah. So I'm with Stacey on this one. I'm glad Stacey pointed that out. See, this is why why I think Stacey King is the best announcer in all of sports. I said it.
It was late in the game where, you know, you might think that this is the time for someone to slack off and not point out that the cheesesteak man is barehanding it.
He says what we're all thinking.
Stacey King.
That's right.
That's right.
All right, so let's talk.
Television.
Exactly. Yeah, I think Stacey King and Marv Albert. I'm just throwing it out there. Let me throw, that'd be some good stuff. All right.
Stacey.
All right. Best layup that should have been a dunk.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go in a little different direction for you here. First quarter, Jimmy Butler gets a steal, and he passes it left side to Aaron Brooks, and they're on a two-on-one, and Butler is running back on the right side, looking like he's about to take the oop, and instead Aaron Brooks lays it up. And Jimmy Butler looked just disgusted. I mean,
leave his feet?
No, because it was evident that Brooks just wasn't making the pass.
Right.
But
that's the worst
right
when
there.
Someone leaves the feet and then there's a layup and they're like, they look foolish because they went high.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he didn't leave his feet, but he had that, like, you know, raising his eyebrows thing.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Do this with my eyes. And
yeah, pointing to the sky. Down. Right.
Yeah. Here's a question. Why is it that every close-up of Fred Hoiberg on the bench looks like he's, like, casing a liquor store? Like, he's got this furtive eye thing going back and forth. I don't understand that. He's like,
he's a sharp looking guy. He's got sort of like I'm a assistant principal kind of look. You know,
yeah,
he does. It's better than Thibodeau because Thibodeau was more like the guy who was in Despicable Me. What was the guy? Wow. I forgot the name of the lead in Despicable Me, but that's who Thibodeau looked like.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Hoiberg looks like he's waiting for Al Pacino to pull the gun out of the box in Dog Day Afternoon.
All right, so give me some tidbits. Give me two tidbits to wrap this up.
Yeah, well, another big brick from the subtitler who miswrote Miritic as two names, first name Asmir and last name Kitch. I didn't think that.
We are onto something. I think that we have a little twist to the Bulls fan jam. I think the Bulls fan jam needs to be watched with subtitles. I think the game needs to be watched with subtitles. There's gold in here, Pete. There's gold. Jack, you're on to something, man.
Yeah, I think so. So Flea Cheese and Asmir Kitch, the Bulls star power forward.
You know that they heard they were late on that, and they're like, I don't know. I'll just type some stuff.
Yeah, what's great about Stacey King is because it's these like sudden bursts where you can just tell like after a dunk or after a big three that the subtitler is just like, ah, dang. And, you know, all of a sudden he's just cranking out all these crazy Stacey words in a row. So even if Stacey's not saying anything funny or memorable, it's just so many words flying out of his face at once that he's just given constant heart attacks.
I'm gonna work this out. I'm gonna spend 2 or 3 days working on this one, like a whole weekend retreat. We're gonna figure out a way to use subtitles from Bulls games with Stacey King to our advantage.
I think that's
all right. Anything else?
No, that's it.
All right,
Bulls win, and we move on.
I love it. Bulls win a random game in November. That's what we do here on the download. We give extensive, deep coverage to the random win. beating the Philadelphia 76ers in the beginning of November. Jack Silverstein, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, Justin. Thanks, Pete.
It's the download here on WGN. Live music in the studio, the All-State Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. It's a download. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Mooner. They're playing Thursday night at Bee Kitchen. You know, we did the sound check. We're ready for song number two, which is good. Let's go through the band members. Lee Ketch, Joe Pruitt, Andy Ketch, Nick Harris. Guys, what can we expect from B-Kitchen on Thursday night?
That's going to be an awesome show. We're opening for the Flamin' Groovies, who are one of the most legendary 70s rock bands to ever be. I mean, and then a really great band from Milwaukee, Trapper Shep and the Shades are coming as well. So, I mean, rock.
When you guys play in Chicago, where do you usually play?
My favorite venue is the Hideout. I don't know about you guys.
The Empty Bottle is pretty great, too.
Pretty great. Nick owns a DIY venue in his basement called Club Soda.
Yeah.
That's a great name.
Shows in my place all the time. That's my favorite spot to play.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to load in or load out at all. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the best venue name I've heard in a long time. Club Soda. There you go. All right. So let's get another track in here before the Bears game is up, because only about 3 minutes to go. The Bears just took the lead with a touchdown. Jay Cutler throws another touchdown here. So how about that? He looks like he hits the backup tight end. What's that guy's name? Miller? Yeah, whatever.
Asking the wrong people.
Anyway, I don't know. Yeah, I'm like, one of the backup tight ends on the. Pete just gave me a nod saying, "Yeah, it's Miller," so that's good to go. So touchdown for the Bears to take the lead late in the game, 3 minutes to play. Here on the download, though, Mooner, we're going to be live at B Kitchen on Thursday night. The new LP masterpiece is out. All right, what are we going to hear?
Song's exactly 3 minutes. It goes out to Jay Cutler, and it's called Allison.
All right, here we go. Mooner. In studio here on Michigan Avenue. All right, Mooner. Instead of playing Beat Kitchen on Thursday night over on Belmont. Also, the new LP is out. The band members, let's get everybody represented here. We've got Lee Ketch, Joe Pruitt, Andy Ketch, Nick Harris. So, you know, the music, I can't thank you guys enough for coming down here and playing the music. After Beat Kitchen, what do you guys got?
I've got one at the Empty Bottle December 7th, and then we are recording our next LP.
All right. Well, you guys got to come back.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for being here, and thanks for the music here on the download on WGN. It's the download here on WGN. We're wrapping up as the Bears post-game team gets ready. This is Hamp OB, show with Glenn Kozlowski, all coming up here on WGN Radio. The postgame is the Bears right now have a 3-point lead coming up at the 2-minute warning. The Chargers right now, 2nd and 10, are on their own 42-yard line, but they are driving. It looks like another nail biter for the Bears, and we have the perfect show coming up, 10:30. Jay Cutler looks good, Pete.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
I don't see the first down. I don't see the. I can't hear the announcers because we've been on the air. I just have the TV over in the corner here. Mm-hmm. But I can only imagine that they're saying that Jay Cutler looks good. He made some nice plays. He hit that touchdown, 2 touchdowns in the game. No interceptions, right?
I'm one of those Jay Cutler.
Oh no, he's got the big interception, pick six.
Yeah. I'm one of the
early.
One of the Jay Cutler apologists.
Cutler is 27 of 40 for 345, 2 touchdowns and an INT.
Wow.
Yeah.
When I was coming back from Dallas this morning, I was in the waiting area to get on the plane, and there was this guy, 700 pounds, Buffalo Bills hat, like a sloppy T-shirt. Talking, I don't know. He's talking football, but he's talking about some quarterback. He can't even quarterback. He throws something, and it's always a pick six. I'm like, what do you know?
What do you know? Did you say that to him?
No, but I was.
Oh, that's classic, Pete.
Yeah, but did he have a queso stain on his T-shirt? That signifies a real fan.
He had many stains.
My buddy told me this weekend that he was at an airport, and Rick Perry, governor of Texas, came up to him, and he was wearing a Cubs hat. And Governor Perry's line was, "You know, the Cubs haven't won a World Series since 1908." And my friend's like, he goes, "Thank you, didn't know that."
He might have done better had he come out and said that during debate.
It was just so funny that was his go-to. You could just be like, "Hey, go Cubs!" But he had some. He just had a fact. He had a very obvious fact.
Yeah, he doesn't know the cabinet, but he knows the Cubs.
He knows the Cubs haven't won a World Series in a long time. Welcome to Texas.
Yeah, but that puts him with a lot of people in the United States, unfortunately.
He's a populist, you know?
Yeah, well.
There you go.